Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMWX, a few minutes past 4 p.m. Always good to talk to our good friend, Bob Ramsey. Rammer, how you doing, buddy?
My favorite group of people. How is the gang?
You know, normally I would think you're kidding, but I think you mean it. I think you're one of us, buddy. You're the fifth Beatle.
Yeah, well, you know, just make sure I get on the album cover.
So, exciting times for SLU basketball. Talk us through it. What do we know?
Well, you know, this past week, actually this week officially, the Billikens hired Josh Schertz, the former head coach at Indiana State, made a terrific run with them. I think anybody who is being fair-minded would tell you they got snubbed and should have been in the NCAA tournament. They made the long run in the NIT. It's not the same thing. I'm not trying to say that, but it was a sustained run. Josh comes in, and he's hired his three main assistants. There's still a handful of full-time jobs to be filled. They use various titles for them, player development, you know, other things like that. So the staff still needs to be fleshed out, but Josh is here. There's a lot of rumors, nothing more than that yet, that two or three of his players will come from Indiana State with him. Mm-hmm. The hope is two or three players currently on the Billiken roster will stay in St. Louis. So a lot of moving parts as we jump into this.
So I'm going to ask both Bob and Wheeler a dumb question, and it's dumb because there are so many answers to it. But we had Travis Ford. Everyone liked him, didn't do well. Now we have Schertz, and we're very excited. In general, what's the difference between a Travis Ford and a Schertz? What's the difference between a Calipari and a Glover? What makes someone an exceptionally good college coach at this level?
That's a great one, isn't it, Kevin? And I tell you, sometimes, and I think we're seeing it more and more, after a period of time, things can get stale. We even see it at the pro level, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The same message, things can get stale, and then once there is a bump in the road, or worse, a crevasse that you fall into, organizations, college and pro, feel like it's time to pull the plug and change it up, not only for things on the field or on the court, but in the stands. Is that fair, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, number one, that standard is changing rapidly with college sports changing rapidly. What was a great thing and what worked 15 years ago may not work the same way now, right? You got to manage name, image, and likeness. You basically have to keep re-recruiting your players every year because they all have the opportunity to transfer out and go somewhere else. And I think a great example of that changing, Rammer, is using Kentucky as an example. I mean, Coach Calipari has won more there than almost anybody has ever won anywhere, yet it got to the point where they're going to move on. They let him go to a conference rival, and he took less money to go to a conference rival, even though he had had all that success. And to be honest, if Rammer, if he didn't have the rings, he wouldn't have been there as long as he was.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you mentioned NIL. The NIL portal combo has changed the game in just a handful of years so dramatically that even us that are you know, neck deep in the business, it's hard to predict where it's going to go. And it is crazy right now. The idea of building a program with 4 and 5 year players it's only a couple of years ago that people felt that, and it's archaic.
Yeah.
It's archaic. And if you were the parent of a child, and even if you're just a coach, a fan, you need to be in the portal. You've got to see what's out there for you because it's business. There's always been a level of business to the game, but now it clearly is a business first.
Rammer, other than the raise, which Coach Schertz got a good raise, good for him. I'm sure you're going to earn every dollar. Other than that, what is the attraction of a St. Louis University for a coach like that?
Well, the facilities, especially with the Alaclan Family Champions Center, the facilities continue to upgrade. And it is a place where there's no reason you don't have the infrastructure to get the players you want and to win. It goes back to the NIL. There have been more commitments there. And being in a major market, you know, some of us us naysayers because they're, oh, St. Louis isn't a major market anymore. Top 25, if you will, in a media market and an opportunity to win. And if you win, and this is not a shot at the Atlantic 10 Conference at all. I like the conference a lot. I like the way it's run. But with the continued more shifting and more new things in conference realignment, who's to say where you might be able to go if you can get sustained winning at St. Louis?
So I want to remind everybody coming up tonight, so you can listen here on KMOX. You can also go out to Humphreys, but you and Tom Ackerman and Josh Schertz are going to sit down for a coach's show that's kind of out of the season, but you guys do this every week during the season, but it'll be a good way for people to get to know him. So 6 until 7 o'clock tonight here on KMOX, and again, people can go out and see it live and in person at Humphreys. You've had a chance to interact with him. I've only heard the sound bites and seen the interviews and all of that. What's he like? I mean, I know we'll get a better taste of him tonight, but what's Coach Schertz like?
Yeah, I'm one of the reasons I'm really looking forward tonight, aside from being on KMOX, it almost feels like it's in season, is the fact that I'll really get to hang with him a little more. I, about a month ago, did a 20-minute interview over the phone. We did an in-person, you know, 10-12-minute interview on Monday when he was announced to the media and folks, and then talked to him maybe 2 minutes one-on-one. So I've got a lot to learn here. You know, the thing that's amazing, a lot to learn. But I think one of the things that's amazing is unsolicited national national pundits in college basketball coming out and singing the praises of Josh Schertz. And I'm talking about not, hey, what do you think about Josh Schertz? Just out of the blue, Seth Greenberg and Jay Billis go out of their way to praise the guy.
Yeah.
And to me, those are that's really interesting that those gentlemen would do that.
In addition to being the voice of the Billikens, Bob Ramsey, of course, all-around sports guy and huge baseball guy. Bob, I know we're only a couple weeks in, but what kind of vibe are you getting from the Cardinals so far?
You know, I think the starting rotation is kind of what the front office advertised. The bullpen, even with some hiccups, is you can see, okay, this is their game plan. This could work. But we're all going, where is the offense? And it's going to be a challenge to get those guys going a little bit. Maybe Lars Nootbaar in the lineup this weekend will help. You know, one guy that I've really been focused on is Victor Scott II. And I think, like most fans, you root for the young guys, especially a dynamic talent, to come out of the gates hot. And I think we're all struggling emotionally with him as he struggles. And, Kevin, I think that he has to understand that while you love to ambush the first pitch in a sequence, that to be a leadoff type hitter, which is we all project him to be, you've got to learn the work to work the count because you can't have a high on base percentage without the walks.
Yeah, and he's got a really high first swing or first pitch swing percentage. I mean, he's swinging at a lot of first pitches and not doing much with them. It's one thing if you're hammering them, but it's another thing if you're just grounding out and popping the ball up into the air. And Raymer, on the same front, kind of switching from the kids to the vets, I don't know how many times you've heard it. I'm sure a million like me, but every coach in every sport, every manager I've ever been around in baseball, if a team's going to be what it needs to be, it comes down to the best players being the best players. And I think once you get Goldschmidt and Arenado going, the lineup starts to go.
You know, we all see the potential there in the lineup. In fact, I just had been saying, oh, the offense will be fine. Well, it's not fine yet.
Right.
And multiple guys on base. The strikeout-walk ratio is something we always talk about with pitchers. But baseball, guys, is a ledger sheet. So if high strikeouts, low walks is great for pitchers, then high walks, low strikeouts must, it's not debatable because it is a ledger sheet, must be great for hitters. And it's out of whack for the hitters right now.
So that leads me to my next question. This is a bit esoteric, but Wheels, I learned this from you, that there are eras you can look back on and go, this was a real hitter's era.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is where the pitchers learned how to throw a screwball, whatever it is. Are not just because the Cardinals are having a hard time with offense, but are we in one of those pitchers' eras right now, and is it even increasing, where it's just getting harder and harder to hit these guys?
Well, as long as we don't run out of UCL ligaments.
Good point.
I would argue we're actually on an in-between. We are we're in the power era. Power pitching, power hitting. So home runs are fine. And actually, you know, runs really aren't changing too much because there's power. But there aren't as many singles and doubles and triples. There's not as much. And it's ideally, it's going to get a little better with the longer these rules changes, the things that they've done are in there, like limiting the shift. And, you know, the pitch clock should help speed the process up. But the problem really is it's neither pitching nor hitting. It's kind of neutral in that regard. But
a new game.
But everything's about home runs and strikeouts and walks. And, I mean, you hit that, Rammer. I think that that's the part that we're trying to work through is what does it become from here?
Well, and, you know, guys, I'm hopeful. I think there are some exceptions, but most things in life, don't we want balance?
Yes.
And I think that's what we're looking at with baseball, too. Yeah, absolutely. Chicks and dudes, by the way, dig the long ball. There's no question about it. And to have power in your lineup is really, you must have it. But can't we have guys that go out and try and win a batting title and hit 320? And can't we have guys that steal bases and don't have power? And can't we have that kind of balance? I think that is the best recipe for success. Getting there, of course, is the challenge.
Since you brought up the rules, how are they working out? How do people now like the pitch clock and the shift and XYZ?
I'm sure Ram will agree. A lot of people love the faster games and the compression of the action more than anything, right? It's not just the amount of time. It's the same amount of action in less time, which gives you a little more fun. But there are I'm not sure I fully buy it, Rammer. I think the pitch clock plays, if any role in the injuries, a very minor role. It would be a very low percentage impact. As some previous pitchers from other generations have pointed out, a lot of guys have worked that fast just naturally. Right. There were a lot of players that Justin Verlander works that fast. Well, he didn't have an arm injury till he was 37. It's probably not a driving force, but because it's the new thing, it's the first thing that players are going to push back on. But I think we all know it, and every pitcher has known it throughout the history of the game. The more you throw as hard as you can, the more you're going to get hurt.
And you know what? I'm still not sure I buy the bigger bases. I guess, you know, six inches, 4 inches, whatever. Okay, I get it. And, there are some more steals around the game, but I think it has more to the throw-over rule and the pitch clock and things like that. The base thing seems just still really odd to me.
I don't think it changed a whole lot, to be honest with you. I think, the limits on the throws, the pickoff moves has changed the game. And I think in a good way, because I think steals are fun. Yeah. And now that people are stealing again, that's much more action. But then I agree with you, Ram. I don't think the base has changed much.
Can I ask a really old man question?
Sure.
So no, go ahead.
We're all old men here.
I've played a lot of baseball, and I played a lot of shortstop. My last memory of it is on a double play, you had to touch the base while you had the ball in your glove. Do we just sort of go, he was close, because I know my eyesight's failing, but it sure looks like they just kind of wave at the base as they run by.
I think it used to be that way more than it is now, Kevin, because of replay and challenges.
Yep. Yeah, they really cracked down on that within the last few years. But
I'm right, though. There was a while there.
God. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were like 20, 30 years there.
Okay, good.
I mean, they had a name for it. It was called the neighborhood play.
Oh, okay.
If you're just in the neighborhood, they're going to give it to you. Well, they can't. They could do that now. The umpire could let it go, but the dugout's going to be like, no, let's go to the replay.
What do you think of the replay? Do you like it?
Yeah, well, one more thing on the neighborhood thing, Dave. The reason that they got to touch it now, not just because of the replay, but why not? Because the runner can't take you out anymore.
Right.
Uh-huh. Right. So that's kind of why they gave him that little fudge factor.
Right. Yeah. Right. It was a safety thing, and now it's not necessary because they cracked down on that in a different way.
All right. That's Bob Ramsey, voice of the Billikens, tonight 6-7, talking to Coach Schertz. Rammer, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, buddy.
Call me more often. I love visiting with you guys. And I guess
it's all true what your girlfriend. So, Wheels, what's the deal with the camera in the car?
Yeah, so my wife is, I think, through my conversation with her, like learning, like that where we work is not a good area to be in downtown St. Louis. And she sent me this story the other day from the Riverfront Times, which is a person sitting at a light on Tucker and Cole, so literally a couple blocks down from the station from our building. The car's got a, it's got a dash camera, and just 10 straight cars blow right through a red light. I mean, not stop and look and go, just blowing right through the red light. And she's like, is this near you? I'm like, yeah, it's a couple blocks away. I drive past that every day, and I see that every day. Not 10 cars in a row. I don't think I've ever seen that, but I see that every single day. And then we have the, she sent me another story about the murder shell right down the street. And like, yep, that's the same spot.
They're literally like, that's right. My shell, honey.
Yeah, like that's, I've not once gone there. I will not go there. If you need gas, you can go the other direction. There's some better options in the other direction.
But, like Indiana.
It was a little far, but yeah. But like, I'm saying these things with a laugh because we bring it up all the time. But how hard would it be to say, you know what we're going to do? A couple times a month, we're going to put 6 police cars out there, and we're just going to start popping people for doing this. How long do you think doing that would take to get that behavior to slow down?
Mm-hmm. And some revenue.
And I'm not picking on the police on this at all. I mean, if they were told this is what we're going to do, I'm sure that they'd be happy with doing it. But we know there's no squad cars downtown.
Red light cameras, but I'd be okay with them downtown.
I mean, but here's the problem with them, though.
No one's going to pay it.
Well, A, there are so many cars with no driver's license, with no license plate. Right. So how in the world are you going to find out who it is?
Yeah.
And who do you know who's even driving the car? It could be someone else driving the car. It's a pain in the butt.
True. 437 DGS on KMOX. You guys see the guys, the fishermen who were saved on the tiny little remote uncharted island like Gilligan?
Yeah, they wrote in the sand.
Yeah, they took palm fronds and they wrote out the word help.
Wow.
Just like on every movie we've ever seen.
Yeah, so it worked.
And Coast Guard was flying over, saw it, picked him up. It worked.
Where was it again?
Middle of nowhere, and they were fishing, and it's quite an island, though. It's really interesting. It's about the size of a football field, and they were able to catch fish, and there was a natural spring-fed well.
Wow, good luck.
So, hell, I would have written, go away.
Leave me here.
Yeah, doing fine.
I'm swimming and fishing.
Ding-dongs, please. You know?
Can you drop food?
Yeah.
Or snacks. Sorry, you just need snacks. You got food.
No kidding.
Send an iPad with Netflix and all my shows downloaded, and I'm good.
So, Rach, AI's already beating us in art contests?
Yeah, so Pink Floyd runs this art contest every year, and they recently made it legitimate to... You can submit AI-generated art. And this one artist did like 7 different pieces, and they used an AI art generator, and they ended up winning the entire contest. And people are mad. Mm. Even though it's within the rules, they still just feel that it's really unfair to let a computer-generated image win the entire shebang. Yeah. And it's just kind of sparked a debate about, are you using this as a tool or are you using it to cheat?
I know, like, my tattoo guys, I was in a couple weeks ago, and they were saying it's so amazingly helpful for them. Because, say, for example, I want to get a big tattoo of an angel, like a really realistic black and gray angel.
Yeah.
Well, I can, in the olden days, I would go to Google Images and I would find one and I would take it to my guys and be like, hey, can you do this? And tattooers don't really like to just completely replicate someone's work.
Right, right.
So they'll make it their own. But what they can do now is like, okay, what kind of angel do you want? Oh, I want like a big tough one with a sword. They'll put that in AI. They'll give them a whole bunch of brand new, never before seen by human images. And they're like, how about this one?
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that cool?
I do. I mean, I see artists using it as a legitimate tool to further their art. But I also get why people are upset about this art contest in general, where it's like, yeah, use your creativity, but you're using the computer at the same time. I mean, it's kind of a tough thing.
How would we feel about if it was a writing contest? Wouldn't that feel like cheating?
A little bit,
And then if it's writing a paper for school, it's definitely cheating, so.
Speaking of AI, so Meta has an image generator and they were having problems all last week. People would try to type in, like, show me an Asian man in a relationship with a white woman. And the image generator was straight up not able to do it. It just kept spitting out like two Asian people or maybe like one person. It was like a really big age gap. It was just blowing the image generator's little AI mind. Like,
why?
It could not. I don't know the answer why. Someone was finally able to get it to spit out the right kind of image like earlier today I saw online. But I'm just so interested with things like that because these programs only know what we tell them.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, like, what was it that someone
like that
told
them? That
doesn't
happen.
Right. Like, I'm sure no one said anything with any sort of intentional bias, but obviously this program was fed something to where it just had a hang up about that. And I'm just so interested in that. And I'm interested to see how that's going to play out throughout history because we caught the thing with the founding fathers. You know, they'd say, show me a historically accurate picture of founding fathers of the United States. And it kept showing people of color, which is not accurate. Now this thing with like, oh, we can't do this interracial couple.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to catch everything right away. So as the years go on, we're going to be like, oh yeah, I never thought of that before. And it's just so interesting to see how it's playing out. And it makes you wonder what they put in.
And
initially.
It makes you wonder who are the correctors? Who is
right.
it? Who is its responsibility? Because in 300 years, you may look back and go like, well, how about that? Ben Franklin was a Mexican dude. I had no idea.
Right.
Like, whose job is it to see those things and go, oh, actually, that's not quite right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how you, I mean, is it possible that it's as simple as those connections were never made in its developing brain?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
then, it could be literally anything. Like, one might not be able to say peanut butter sandwich because it hasn't connected those things in the past for whatever reason.
I'm going to be saying peanut butter sandwich in my head now.
You should
all
be saying that.
Night.
I say it all the time.
You don't have an inner dialogue.
No, out loud. I say it to everybody.
Well, that's different.
Peanut butter sandwich.
Wheels, how are you today?
Peanut butter sandwich.
Peanut butter sandwich.
That's actually going to be my new thing and see how people react. I'll tell you guys how that goes.
I like turtles.
Yeah, I like turtles.